Good afternoon. Thank you all for gathering here this afternoon. My name is Bill Lawrence. I'm the Dean at Perkins School of Theology at Southern Methodist University, and I'm delighted to be able to welcome you here to this Faith and Business Luncheon for the late part of the spring semester 2013. I'm going to introduce both of our speakers, let you hear a little bit about their backgrounds, and then we will hear first from our guest who is speaking with us, and then immediately thereafter from the faculty member at Perkins School of Theology, whom I will introduce to you. And then after they, in sequence, care for their presentations, as time permits, Dr. Raspberry will open up the floor for questions and conversation until our scheduled concluding time at 1:30. So let me begin by introducing to you the person who will speak second. He is a member of the Perkins School of Theology faculty. Dr. Ruben L.F. Abito is professor of world religions and spirituality. He also serves as interim coordinator of spiritual formation here at Perkins School of Theology. Dr. Abito is a native of the Philippines. He began his formal education earning a bachelor's degree at Manila University, and then went on to Japan, where he engaged in his advanced studies, including additional degrees beyond the baccalaureate level at Tokyo University and Sophia University, culminating with his doctorate at Tokyo University. His research fields, besides spirituality, include world religions generally, but more specifically, East Asian Buddhism, Japanese medieval Buddhism, themes in comparative theology, spirituality, and socio-ecological engagement. As a matter of personal background, Ruben was raised Roman Catholic and was educated in the Jesuit disciplines. That means he and the new Pope have at least one thing in common. But Ruben went to Japan as a missionary and became an expert in the studies of Buddhism. As a result, he has among his professional distinctions serving as president of the Society for Buddhist Christian Studies, having been the recipient of a Henry Luce Fellow grant in theology for similar kinds of study. Ruben is a former Jesuit priest who turned master practicing in the Sambo Kyodan lineage of Zen. In his early youth, having gone to Japan on missionary work where he began Zen practice under a Zen master who had really reached beyond the normal boundaries of Zen training and taught many Christian students, Ruben, in 1988, received a Dharma transmission from Yamada Kon. Ruben left the Jesuit order in 1989, and in 1991 founded a lay organization called the Maria Canon Zen Center in Dallas, where he, besides his academic duties as a researcher and teacher here at Perkins, is functioning as a Zen master in training. He has remained a faculty member at Perkins since 1989. Dr. Abito and his wife, Dr. Maria Abito, are here with us, and in just a moment after I've introduced our other speaker, you'll have an opportunity to greet them. Our second speaker is actually going to go first. Are you keeping up with the math here? She's the math expert, by the way. Anusha Ansari is a co-founder and chief executive officer of Prodea Systems. And she launched her company on September 18th, 2006. She also blasted off the face of the Earth for an 8-day expedition aboard the International Space Station and captured headlines around the world as the first female private space explorer. She also earned a place in history as the first astronaut of Iranian descent, the first Muslim woman to be in space, and the fourth private explorer to visit space. She says in her book that this was the accomplishment of a lifelong dream that she has had since she was a child. As a successful entrepreneur and active proponent of world-changing technologies and social entrepreneurship, she, along with her family, provided the title sponsorship for the Ansari X Prize, a $10 million cash award for the first non-governmental organization to launch a reusable manned spacecraft into space within 2 weeks. The feat was accomplished in 2004 by legendary aerospace designer Bert Rutan. With the success of the XPRIZE competition, Ansari helped launch an entirely new era in private space exploration. Before her space ventures, she served as co-founder, chief executive officer, and chair for Telecom Technologies. After earning 3 key U.S. patents, and growing 100% year over year since its inception, her company successfully merged with Sonus Networks, where she served as general manager and vice president of the SoftSwitch division. She is a member of the XPRIZE Foundation's Vision Circle, as well as its Board of Trustees, a life member of the Association of Space Explorers, a member of the Advisory Board of Teachers in Space. She has received multiple honors, including the World Economic Forum Young Global Leader, the Ellis Island Medal of Honor, the Horatio Alger Award for Distinguished Americans, DFW International Community Alliance Hall of Fame Award, the Working Women's National Entrepreneurial Excellence Award, George Mason University Entrepreneurial Excellence Award, George Washington University's Distinguished Alumni Achievement Award, and the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award for the Southwest Region. Under her leadership, Telecom Technologies earned recognition as one of Inc. magazine's 500 fastest-growing companies, and Deloitte & Touche, Fast 500 technology companies. She serves on the boards of a number of not-for-profit organizations that are focused on STEM education and youth empowerment. She works to enable social entrepreneurs to bring about radical change globally. She is focused in social entrepreneurship around the world, including the Middle East and Central Asia. She runs an annual competition called the What If Competition for middle school students to promote free thinking and STEM education. Her bachelor's degree in electronics and computer engineering came from George Mason University. She subsequently earned a master's degree in electrical engineering from George Washington University and has received an honorary doctorate from International Space University and from George Mason University. And because she believes in continuing her education, she's currently working on a master's degree in astronomy from Swinburne University. Don't you feel as if you've accomplished nothing in your life? But actually you have, and that's why we're all here. Please join me in welcoming the faculty member who will speak second and the presenter who will speak first, Dr. Ruben Abito and Anusha Ansari.
Thank you. Well, it's an honor and privilege to be here amongst you today and be the second speaker who speaks first. But before I start, I want to thank Hindi to have made this possible for me to share some of my personal experiences and my personal belief. This is a very different presentation. I do presentation mostly talking about my experience of going to space. So this is a very personal presentation, and hopefully it will all go well. I end by this piece by Carl Sagan because I think it beautifully summarizes the experience you have when you travel to space and you do really see how big the universe is and what seems so big and, you know, all-encompassing now seems so small. And It's an empowering and humbling experience at the same time. It's humbling because, you know, you feel small. You feel a very, very tiny, insignificant part of something much bigger. But at the same time, all those things that seem so big and impossible also shrinks. And you feel empowered. All those problems that seem to be impossible to solve on a global level, it all shrinks. So it enables you. You feel like, you know, it's not a problem anymore. I can fix it. So that's why I wanted to share that with you. And it sort of sets the tone for talking about my faith and beliefs and the role it plays in my life. And as you all know, I was born in Iran. I was raised in Iran, and I came to the United States as a teenager when I was about 16 years old. And I was born in one of the largest cities in Iran. It's a religious city to a Muslim family. And from early childhood, I don't know if it was my experience with you know, falling in love with the stars and with the skies, I always looked up there for the answers to the most important questions of life. You know, everyone wants to know, why are we here? What are we doing here? How did we come about? And I always looked up to find the answers. And that's why I fell in love with astronomy and the science of finding out how our universe came about. And it has been a cornerstone of my life. And also at the young age, I started developing my relationship with God as a sort of a very personal relationship. It's a one-on-one relationship for me, and it has been the constant that has helped me through a lot of difficulties and challenges in my life. To me, when I look around, I see God in everything. I see God in every one of your faces when I look at it, and even living as me here and the experience that we have together. And to me also, God is that little voice inside that sort of points out the doors and the opportunities to me and gives me that courage to walk through those doors. The little voice inside that when things seem difficult, it reminds me that every dark night ends with a beautiful, bright morning, and that life is a collection of constant change, and that if I don't like something, I just need to wait a little bit and it will change, and usually change for the better. And sometimes I can't even see it that it's changing for the better until some time passes and I look back and I'm like, you know, at the time when I was going through it, I kept saying, why? Why is it happening to me? But then now I understand why, and it has, you know, somehow helped me grow either spiritually, personally, somehow grow as a person. And all of that is what sort of maybe summarizes my relationship with my faith and belief in God. And that has been sort of, as I said, the constant that has helped me through difficult times. When I was about 5 years old, my parents got into a very messy divorce. And I had a young sister and sort of became the responsible person. At least I was made to feel that I was responsible for her and her well-being. I was a child myself, so I felt this pressure, and it was very difficult change that I was going through. And I think at that time is when this personal relationship with God started for me, and that was the voice that kept me calm at night and helped me through that difficult time. And later on, as I grew and we had the revolution in Iran and a lot of things were happening around me, a lot of people that I cared for were injured or killed in the process, a lot of chaos just around me, people that I didn't know, you know, getting killed. And then the war started with Iraq, and then, you know, during the first 5 years I was there in Iran and seeing all the, you know, brutality and all the killings going on. And when you see these things so close, up close and personal, It makes you question a lot of things as to why it's happening, why to these people, because you see innocent people getting hurt. And you have to have that relationship to help you sort of make sense of it all. And so that has been the constant in my life that sort of kept me on the path. And then coming here to the United States, having the opportunity and the fortune to be able to come here, and which has allowed me to grow as a person and to have many opportunities that I wouldn't have otherwise if I had, you know, continued to live in Iran. And being grateful for those opportunities, remembering that, you know, I have been given a gift that I need to acknowledge and also be able to use that gift to give back to people around me. And when I talk to a lot of kids and children, they tell me that, you know, it's very difficult for someone to have big and audacious dreams because it's difficult to make them come true. And of course, I had one of those very, very big dreams, dreaming of going to space. And as you can imagine, in Iran, growing up as a young girl, you know, Iran didn't even have a space program back then. Nobody took me seriously. They all thought, well, she's going to grow up and probably forget about it, and, you know, she's going to do something. You know, I sort of didn't care what people told me. There was a voice inside me that told me that if I stuck with it, that I felt I will somehow, some way find the means of making it happen. And so when I first came to the United States, I was like very excited. I thought, well, this is my chance. I'm going to go there. I'm going to be the best student I can be, and I'm going to go apply to NASA, and I'm going to, they can't say no to me. And of course, I came here and I learned that, you know, it's not that easy. And I was not even a U.S. citizen back then, and so many complications of becoming an astronaut. And then, you know, we didn't have any money, so my mom's like, you need to study something that you can find a job very quickly, because, you know, I'm the elder in the family, so you have to support everyone. So I decided, okay, NASA, maybe I should put it on hold, and so I became an engineer, electrical engineer, studied engineering, and that launched sort of my career in the telecom industry. So, you know, hindsight, you know, my mom's advice wasn't that bad. So making money wasn't a bad idea. So it worked out. But it was important for me to remember that passion and have hope that I will find a way. Even though it's not now, even though it's not here, I need to continuously look for those doors when they're pointed out to me and have the courage to walk through them. And after we sold our company, that door opened up for me, and I was ready. I had not forgotten about my passion. I was ready, and I was given the opportunity to meet with someone who was launching an organization called XPRIZE, and joined forces with him. We launched this prize that everyone told us is a crazy idea. We're going to get a lot of people killed building rockets in their garages. We didn't kill anyone, fortunately. But we had about 26 teams from 11 countries participated. I remember one of the guys, their team was a team of, I think there were four or five young guys in California that they said, build rocket for food. So anyone who feed them, they would go help them with their projects of building rockets. So it was amazing to get to know all these people that shared this passion with me. And it was a successful prize. It was won in 2004. It completely has changed the face of the space industry. I don't know if any spacemans are in the audience, but things are changing. NASA now, even though they were very resistant to working with private companies, now have you know, retired some old programs in in favor of working with private partners. There are like five companies that have sort of started building as part of these activities, and a lot of new jobs have been created out of it. So it's a lot of excitement in an industry that sort of had become stagnant. So when I look back at it, yes, I came here. I wasn't able to go to NASA. I still love NASA, and I wanted to become a full-time astronaut. But I did find my way and my path to make my dream come true. And that's why I think through that faith and belief and knowing that, you know, if I follow my heart, if I follow what I believe in, that the path will appear, and I will find the strength and what is needed to walk through that path. I saw the same thing happen in my companies, and if the entrepreneurs in the room, they know that it's not always smooth sailing. And you know, through building our first company, I've always been a partner with my husband, so we built companies together. We had many, many nights when we would go to bed at night and think about the payroll that was coming up, you know, in a couple of days' time, and not having enough money in the bank to make payroll. And even though we were growing very rapidly and business was doing well, we had very large customers who like to wait 90 days before paying their bills. Of course, my employees couldn't wait 90 days to get paid, so I had to bridge that gap. And so many, many sleepless nights thinking about how it's going to happen. And, you know, I've witnessed many miracles that have happened and helped me find a way to you know, work through those difficult days at work. I always like to build my companies as family, so I not only get to know the employees, but know their families, and sort of, I look at it as this is one big unit that works together. And when we sold the company and then the big telecom bust happened in 2000, there was a big layoff. We had to let half of the company go after the merger. And it was one of the most difficult times of my life. It was like, you know, sort of cutting one of my own arms almost. And I was standing there, I was crying, the employees were crying, we were all crying together, and I felt helpless. But I also believe that even though this is a very difficult time, that every single one of them will be fine, and they will find a way to work through this, problem that we are all facing. And then they have worked fine. And it's amazing to know that, you know, I always thought that if, you know, if someone would fire me, I probably would hate them forever. But there was no hatred in the room, and they were a lot of mutual respect, and we've kept in touch even after all that has happened. And same thing happened in my new company with the financial crisis that happened, and we were in the middle of closing a financing, and it all evaporated, and I had to, you know, shrink the company. But I've learned that, you know, no matter what you accomplish, what heights you accomplish also, you have to know that it will not stay the same and it will change, and that you can never stay on top, and it always is up and down, up and down. And that's what life is. It's about experiences. But, you know, so sort of having that belief and faith inside that helps you make sense of all those ups and downs, that helps you understand later on, at least when you look back, as to why that happened. And those experiences that translate into growth, personal growth for you, is what it's all about. And I've been fortunate that I'm blessed with a very interesting and challenging life. But I can't complain, because the experiences have been wonderful. And it has brought me to audiences like this, where I can share these stories, share my story with a lot of young students, encouraging them to go after their dreams and to find a way to fight through those difficult times. And thank you for having me here and letting me share this with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Anusha. I'm honored to be invited to serve as a respondent of to offer reflections on our speaker's presentation. And before I do so, while I was listening to her, that inspired me also to share with you that my first love was also astronomy. I was a little boy also, and somehow began to wonder about those beautiful things up there. And so I wanted to go into astronomy. But since in the Philippines they did not have such a program, the closest thing that I got into was to begin a degree in physics. Now, when I was in my first year at the university, somehow that sense of wonder at, well, the stars and everything around me kept me going. So instead of doing my math homework, what I ended up doing was reading a lot of philosophical works and religious texts, and reading novels like Dostoevsky and Camus and so on, asking questions of why rather than the how. So my math homework got sidelined. So within a year or so, I found myself shifting my whole trajectory from one directed toward a scientific career to a religious one, where I could spend more of my time, and in fact my entire time, to asking why and how, what's the point of all of this, and how can we really live a life that is worthy of this gift of life that we are all given. So that's what led me into the Jesuits and so on, and so the story goes with that. So I thank you so much for sharing your childhood dream, which somehow resonated with me, because I believe that if we really look at our own life right now, just this mystery of breathing in and breathing out and just being able to walk and being able to take a drink of water and so on, basically it's a mystery. So what I would like to offer for the first part of my reflection highlighting Anusha's talk is to read some comments of those who had the privilege, like Anusha did, of going up in space. This is a book I received about 10 years ago from a friend called The Home Planet, a Life magazine issue, I believe. In any case, it records, well, together with some pictures of some of those that you've already seen, it records also comments by astronauts and cosmonauts who had that privilege to go up there. I wish I had the preparation to offer it to you in a slide, but let me just read to you from the book that I have read again and again for some comments of those who have that privilege of seeing our Earth from that vantage point of space. Let me read first of all a comment by Boris Volynov of the former USSR. During a space flight, the psyche of each astronaut is reshaped. Having seen the sun, the stars, and our planet, you become more full of life, softer. You begin to look at all living things with greater trepidation, and you begin to be more kind and patient with the people around you. At any rate, that's what happened to me. Boris Volynov. Then there is Sultan bin Salman Al Saud of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The first day or so, we all pointed to our countries. The third or fourth day, we were pointing to our continents. By the fifth day, we were aware of only one Earth. From Muhammad Ahmad Faris of Syria. From space, I saw Earth, indescribably beautiful, with the scars of national boundaries gone. Then there is Vladimir Kovalyanok of the former USSR. After an orange cloud formed as a result of a dust storm over the Sahara and caught up by air currents, reached the Philippines and settled there with rain, I understood that we were all sailing on the same boat. couple more, and this is from Ernst Messerschmitt of the Federal Republic of Germany, then was still divided between two Germanies. I read it in the English translation. When the Russian cosmonaut tells me that the atmosphere over Lake Baikal is as polluted as it is over Europe, and when the American astronaut tells me that 15 years ago he could take much clearer pictures of the industrial centers than today, then I'm getting concerned. Yuri Artyukhin of the former USSR. It isn't important in which sea or lake you observe a slick of pollution, or in the forest of which country a fire breaks out, or on which continent a hurricane arises. You are standing guard over the whole of our Earth. And Edgar Mitchell, USA. Suddenly, from behind the rim of the moon, in a long, slow-motion moment of immense majesty, there emerges a sparkling blue and white jewel, a light, delicate sky-blue sphere, laced with slowly swirling veils of white, rising gradually like a small pearl in a thick sea of black mystery. It takes more than a moment to fully realize this is Earth, our home. And finally, as Jay Leno would say, the Earth reminded me of a Christmas tree ornament hanging in the blackness of space. As we got farther and farther away, it diminished in size. Finally, it shrank to the size of a marble, the most beautiful marble you can imagine. That beautiful, warm, living object looked so fragile, so delicate, that if you touched it with a finger, it would crumble and fall apart. Seeing this has to change a human being, has to make one appreciate the creation of God and the love of God. And if some of us may recall, having read some of the accounts of what happened to the astronauts and cosmonauts after they had that unique experience of looking at our Earth from space, somehow many, if not most of them, had a total change of course in their life. Some became ministers. Some became earth conservationists. Some devoted their lives more to human flourishing in a way that somehow something must have happened. And Anusha also relates to us how something happened to her while up there, which has now blossomed through the rest of her life. Now, the privilege of being able to go up there and watch the Earth from that vantage point is limited to only very few of us, and we're grateful that they're here to tell the story and to allow us to also share vicariously in their experience. And we do so by reading their accounts and also watching the videos and so on. But perhaps for those of us who may not have that blessing or privilege, there may be other ways in which we can look at that same Earth with wonder and mystery and gratitude, looking at a blade of grass, looking at a tree, or just glancing up at a starlit sky, or looking at the face of a newborn infant, or just being aware of our breath and realizing it's all a gift, a precious gift that can be snuffed out anytime by some freak accident or by some violent act from somewhere that we don't know. And so what are some of the lessons that we can receive from those who have had that privilege of watching from the sky, and those maybe who may not have had that same privilege but have also become aware of this mystery of life? Well, first of all, that very sense of mystery. And that sense of mystery and awe brings forth a sense of gratitude. having received this gift of life, together with all living beings, with all breathing beings, I can only be grateful for the rest of my life for this gift and do what I can to express this gratitude. So the third element that comes would be a sense of responsibility, to be able to respond to this gift of life, to this mystery, in a way that is worthy of this gift. So how may I live my life in a way that I can continually respond in a way that upholds this life, always acknowledges this mystery, and cherishes the preciousness of each and every living being that I encounter in my life. So I'd like to close with just a few pointers from the Buddhist tradition that I learned so much from as somehow things that we might keep in mind in terms of what to do from here. There is a passage in the early Buddhist scriptures that says, the summary of the awakened one, the Buddha's teaching, can be given in 3 points. First, do no harm. How can I live my life in a way that does no harm to anybody? Not just on the individual level that I relate with my friends and loved ones, but how can I be in an institution or in a workplace or in a community or in a structure or corporation that does no harm? Are there some things that I'm already doing without knowing it and am unwittingly participating in some harm through my involvement in some whatever activities I may be involved in? And if so, what may I do about those? Do no harm. Secondly, do all that is good. Do all that is beneficial for all. So now, instead of just taking that negative stance of not doing harm, what can I do with all the resources around me, not just my individual, but also corporate, community, church, in a way that all of that can be geared toward a beneficial way for all of us to flourish in life? And thirdly, the spirit of the Buddhist teaching is think, say, and do everything for the sake of the well-being of all. So if I'm able to live my life in a way that cherishes this gift, acknowledges this mystery, and lives this sense of responsibility to the mystery, given those three helps from the Buddha, then perhaps this whole world might be a totally different one from the way we see it now, a very destructive and very dangerous and very threatening kind of world that we are somehow consigned to live in. Somehow, if that change happens in each and every one of us, and that little candle that we light in our lives can somehow light one another's, there might be a different earth that we will be able to cherish and live in together. So that is my hope and my prayer. And I'm grateful to Anusha for sparking the light that can now be spread through all of us in the way we live our lives in our own circles of work and play and family and our human communities. Thank you again, Anusha, and thank you everyone for being here.
Thank you, Ruben and Anusha. And we have a few minutes before we have to depart, and I'm going to ask if the two of you would be willing to take some questions maybe from the audience quickly if we can, and there may be some that have questions. If you have a question, now is the time to ask it. Yes, Rena, let me bring you the microphone because we're recording.
I'd like to ask Anusha, what was the impact on your faith and your concept of faith from having gone into space?
Because I was a spiritual person before my trip, I think it reinforced that a lot. And I think it helped me shape a little bit better understanding of what I was feeling, but not maybe coming to a sort of complete picture with it. And that was that the wholeness that you see when you look from up there, that everything is all part of one universe. And coming to this understanding that we live individual lives, but the life that's being lived in the universe is, that's what God's life is to all of us. So even though we may look around us and say, why all these things are happening, disasters, bombings, all these things, which, you know, they're very bad and horrible. But if we look at it in general, as a whole, if we don't look at the individual parts, as a whole, our lives have improved over time, you know, since our existence. And we, if we look at it in that sense, then we are on a positive trajectory, in my opinion. And even though individually we're experiencing things that are not optimal, I think that's one of the experiences that I had being part of this going to space.
Could you describe how the relationship with the other astronauts that you went up with changed after going through this experience?
It taught me a very important lesson. And then when I came back, actually, I proposed that we send all our world leaders to space. Because truly, I can promise you they will come with complete different policies. Yeah. I agree. Let's send the one in Iran up the one way. But it's true, because you see the people from different religions, different backgrounds, we speak different languages, different personalities, and we are all sort of trapped in this, you know, space station. I was there for 11 days. Some of them live up there for 6 months. Now they're going to 1 year mission. So you have, you know, between 3 to 6 people living together from different parts of the world. And they understand when they're there that their livelihood and their survival depends on each other, and that they need to work together, and they need to understand each other's, differences. So even if someone's not in the mood and is really not feeling like talking to anyone and they're not very pleasant to be around, the rest understand, and they leave that person alone for that day, and they don't take it personal, and they don't hold grudges, and they don't open the door and put him out there. They can. So they learn to live together. And it's truly, when you look at our planet, it's true. We're sailing on this ship all together. So it is a spaceship. We may not feel like it is. It is a spaceship, and we're all there. And unless we learn how to live together and work together, you know, our survival will be in jeopardy.
Ruben, I have a question. You read from the book, and we just heard Anusha talk about her own faith before she went into outer space. So what is it that makes an experience religious or spiritual?
All our experiences can be religious or spiritual if we really look at it with that sense of awe and mystery. And then, given that, religion is our response to that mystery, how we live our lives in a way that is responsible, in a way that cares for other life. So perhaps, well, I won't go into a definition of spiritual or religious, but just to note that to live a spiritual life is not so much to live apart from this material being that is our day-to-day life, in a separate plane, as it were. That used to be a way of thinking that has prevailed over many, many cultures. But for me, my understanding of spiritual life is to live from the core of our being, to live at the center where we are truly able to appreciate what we are. And in the Christian tradition, the word spirit comes from spiritus, which is spirare in Latin, which is to breathe. That which is breathed into us is the spirit. So to live in a way that we are aware of this breath and the gift that it brings is for me what being spiritual means. And so if we can let that take us to the way we relate to one another and the way we say things to one another and the way we think about things, somehow, again, that can be a great impact and can perhaps stem the kinds of destructive things that we humans are doing to ourselves and to the earth.
Yes, thank you. Thank our guests again, please. Anusha, I want to present to you Dr. Habito's book for your enjoyment, and you can read it, and then you call him up and have a conversation with him again.
Thank you.
And we appreciate very much your being here. Ruben, thank you for giving your time and for being with us. Our next event will be September 30th, Monday, September the 30th. We won't go all the way to outer space with our guests, but we'll get close. Former CEO of American Airlines will be with us, Jim Horton. So I hope that you'll plan to... Tom Horton, thank you very much. Tom Horton, he's already accepted our invitation, and I hope that you will mark that on your calendar. We'll be sending that out in August to remind you to come and be present for that. And we'll look forward to seeing you, if not before, on Monday, September 30th. Thank you very much.